Bullet Cast for life.
All right, what is up, everybody? This is the Bullet Cast Wrestle Dream recap, and it's just me. It's just your boy, Brandon Tangoma. We're here, or I'm here, all alone by myself. No Katie. No Philip, definitely no Brian. So we're kind of calling this an Under the Radar episode. It's kind of a pay-per-view recap. So I'm just knocking out two birds with one stone. I'm calling an Under the Radar episode just so Philip doesn't yell at me and he says I don't do Under the Radars anymore. So here I am all by myself, and we're here to recap the Wrestle Dream card that just took place. It was in the Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington. I have not checked the latest update from WrestleTix, but last thing I saw before the show started, it was around 6,500, maybe 7,000 people there, which I would assume is the worst drawing crowd for a AEW pay-per-view. Not a great look, but also kind of illustrates how AEW is doing right now in viewership, how people are feeling about the product. It's not a hot product right now. And now they're pumping out more pay-per-views. This is their third pay-per-view in 5 weeks. So we had the back-to-back All In, All Out 5 weeks ago, and then a little bit of a break. But also, you put in the Grand Slam show in New York. So technically a free show, but another big-time event. So AEW satiating their audience with a lot of top-tier solid matches and big shows. But as we'll talk about, I think, at the end of the show, when we kind of circle back around and recap it, in this day and age, you're charging people for $50 for a show compared to WWE, where you're paying $5, $10. Maybe it's even free if you're still working on a free trial or it's with your cable provider. I mean, I think there is a different expectation now with AEW pay-per-views since they are $50 compared to WWE live events. But, you know, let's jump into it. I guess we'll just start off the top with the main event. I'll go Philip style. I usually don't like doing that, but I think it's the thing a lot of people are going to talk about. We're going to discuss it when all three of us get back together on Wednesday/Thursday. But main event, Christian Cage defeats Darby Allin in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the AEW TNT Championship. Darby, a Seattle guy, one of numerous people who had Northwest ties on this show. And, you know, people were talking about the match. It was a hard-hitting match. We got the Darby Allin almost dies or tries to die spot in here. But the big news, what this show is probably going to be most remembered for, Adam Copeland, the former Edge, makes his AEW debut. He comes out, has the Ultra Bridge theme. He has a different intro. Obviously, they can't use the You Think You Know Me sample that they use in the intro for his WWE theme, but they redubbed it. It's a female's voice. I think it says, "You don't know him." I don't know if that's Beth's voice or a random lady's voice that they just got to do the line for. I would assume it's either Beth or it has some sort of tie to Edge, because it's a simple line. It doesn't take too much to put that in post. So, Adam Copeland is in AEW, and presumably he's going to go after his best friend Christian for the TNT Championship, or stand alongside Darby and Sting to go up against his new trio, because now Nick Wayne has turned heel on Darby Allin. So I guess we'll just take it from the top of the match itself. So Christian, Darby, as I said, 2 out of 3 falls. The crowd was strong for Darby. He brings out his skateboard and he smashes it on the ring steps, and it was dark, you couldn't see, but at the beginning of the match they're circling each other, and Darby has this nice just straight gash under his eye on his cheek, and it was a pretty cool visual, like, honestly, but it was a streak of blood running down his face, and I would assume like the truck or something bounced back and hit him in the face, because he was swinging that skateboard really hard and it was making a big ass noise. So the match itself, I don't have the time, or I could look it up, but I'm not going to look it up. Darby Allin gets a quick pinfall on Christian. getting his roll up. I forget what he exactly calls it, but you know, he's done this type of move in the past. He used Christian's turtleneck for leverage, and he gets the first pin relatively quickly, of 5 minutes, if that. And so, you know, Christian has, it was a really good visual as well, that Christian had his turtleneck pulled up past his face, almost over his eyeballs, and, you know, he was selling the shock. But on the other hand, I'm not the biggest fan of 2 out of 3 falls matches where we get a really quick pinfall just to get out of the way, whether it's a babyface heel, however you divvy it up, however you tell it. I mean, we always know that they're usually not, if this was a just straight up one-on-one match, the finish would not have come that quickly. So I'm not the biggest fan of 2 out of 3 fall matches to begin with, unless you kind of tell that more sports-like story where you know, have the pinfalls later. But I will defend it a little bit, going back my word, that it was a leverage pin. We've seen Darby do this type of stuff before. Christian wasn't exactly taking Darby too seriously, so it's not the worst. It's definitely not the worst. Like, especially like in WWE matches where someone just hits a random finisher out of nowhere, and that is the pinfall win. Those ones, I said, regular one-on-one match would not have happened like that. But then they wrestle for a few more minutes, maybe 10 plus minutes, and we get Christian take those same ring steps that Darby pummeled himself with the skateboard. He gets it out. I mean, you probably can see the clip on Twitter, or sorry, X. Whatever you call them, the stairs were on the outside of the ring. They were on the ring apron, and Christian throws Darby off his shoulders onto the stairs, and it was a very awkward landing. Darby's like arm was pinned behind his back. He landed like literally on the side of the step, so he didn't land flush like on the flat edge. He landed on the sharp side of the steps, and he gets knocked down. The announcers are selling it like he died. He might have died. I don't know. I mean, we see this all the time with Darby, where he takes numerous just very scary looking bumps, but I don't know how he does it. I would assume it really does hurt, but he is flexible enough, is able to contort his body in such a way that it doesn't hurt him as much as it looks. And that's what he'll say, probably. I mean, that's what Jeff Hardy was saying 20 plus years ago. Still walking, still in relatively good health compared to his brother Matt, who wasn't doing as crazy as stuff, but yet Jeff is seemingly healthy, at least body-wise. Obviously, you know, Jeff has his own things he's going through, but back to the match, the Darby just lays there, and Christian takes the count out. So it's all knotted up at one apiece. We get the stretcher job. The announcers are just selling it so heavy-handed, and I'm just not a big fan of that. I mean, we talked a lot about it on the New Japan AEW show on Forbidden Door, where we had the Bryan Danielson match and the Kenny Omega match, where there was both sell jobs where the wrestlers were legitimately injured, and that's just something I don't like. I think in a match you can tell a story where the wrestlers are hurt, but not in such a way where you're trying to play off the, you know, the emotions of the crowd of like, oh my God, we know everything else is real, but that was really real. We know everything is fake, but we know that was real, and he really hurt himself, and oh my goodness, I hope he's okay. And like, I'm just not a big fan of that, because it just kind of takes out of the moment. You're like, it's either you're legitimately concerned for the wrestler, or it takes you out of the moment because you're like, okay, they're trying to make me seem like he's dead when he's not dead. He's probably fine. It did hurt. It looked like it hurt, but I'm pretty sure Darby is going to be fine. And they do the whole stretcher job. Christian does a splash onto Darby while he's on the stretcher. We get I just kind of call it the Tommaso Ciampa spot, where Christian just undoes the ring apron. He's undoing the ring apron while Darby's getting attended to. But then after all that stuff goes on, they wrestle for a few more minutes with the exposed wood under the on the ring mat, and they just wrestle for a few more minutes. Final time 25-25, and we get just a whole bunch of hullabaloo at the very end. We get a ref bump. We get Nick Wayne come out. We had the TNT title involved, and we also had Nick Wayne's mom involved. She dumped water or, you know, threw water on Christian's face some point during the match. And Nick Wayne just really over the top, right next to Darby, was like, oh my, you know, Darby's yelling at him to go, you know, get Christian. And Nick Wayne just selling it, just yelling, you know, you, my father, my mother, blah, blah, blah. And you can see it coming from a mile away. He takes a turn, swing, clocks Darby with the TNT title. Christian pins him 1, 2, 3, bam, retains the championship. So now Nick Wayne is a heel, and being with Christian after all the terrible things he said about his father. Now, if this was a long-term story, if they had this plan all along, it would kind of make sense, because all the terrible things Christian has said about Nick Wayne's father, he didn't do a damn thing about it. And I always thought that made him look like a schmuck. And it did make him look like a schmuck, but now he's joining up on Christian. He's joining with Christian and Luchasaurus. So I guess we'll find out how that alliance came about, what the dynamic is going to be. But I'll wait and see about that. So then they continue to beat down on Darby. Then Sting comes out to make the save, kind of in a rushed way. He kind of fast walks to make the save, and then they attack Sting 3-on-2 advantage. Break out the concerto. Sting's lying face down. Christian cocks back to hit him in the head, and then the lights go out. And then we get a vignette, and some guy wearing a lot of black, a lot of leather, in a old sports car. And as I, you know, then it's Edge, it's Adam Copeland. Big pop from the crowd, and he teases he's going to join Christian with the concerto, and then we get another turn. He turns against his friend, so he beats up on Nick Wayne, beats up on Luchasaurus. Christian hightails it out of there. Spears galore on Nick Wayne and Luchasaurus. So babyfaces stand tall in the end, even though they did not win the match. But it is what it is. So, yeah, that was the main event. I thought it was a fun match. Obviously, much more of storyline than an actual wrestling match itself. And when you kind of looked up and down the card, I just thought that the Danielson-Zack Sabre Jr. match probably should have made event to this show. But now looking back, out of all the, you know, there's no way they were going to get past this and, you know, just wrestle a regular match after all this happened. So it makes sense why this match ended up being the main event. But now Adam Copeland, it's going to be weird saying that, but that's his name. Taz did drop the rated R superstar. I don't know if he's allowed to, or he just said that off the cuff, but I don't know how all that, you know, corporate speak and all those trademarks and all that shit happens all, yeah, under the radar, after dark. I guess, you know, we can cuss on the show. So hide your kids, hide your wives. Fuck. But Adam Copeland in AEW, we saw this coming. You know, he denied the rumors, but ultimately they ended up being true. I kind of do wish his first thing wasn't with Christian, because I just think he can do something different. Not saying like it's going to be bad per se. They probably are going to cut good promos. Matches, I mean, I think the Christian Darby match was fine, but I kind of put more of that on Darby. I get a little bit more of the credit for Darby than Christian, but as I said, this was much more of shtick, much more of a storyline than an actual like physical wrestling match, like telling a great story in the ring with wrestling moves. They relied heavily on outside interference, on gimmicks, but we will have to wait and see on that. But reverting back all the way to the beginning of the show, also, Luchasaurus in the pre-show, full discrepancy, did not watch the pre-show, but Luchasaurus did defeat Nick Wayne via pinfall in 4 minutes 55 seconds. I did not watch it. I have not seen this, but I would presume they were not hinting at them teaming up. I would maybe Luchasaurus, I'm not going to speak on it too much, but I would assume Luchasaurus just kind of killed him and won. So that also throws in another wrinkle of what the hell are they doing here? Kind of just a turn for the sake of turns. And that was the other thing. Like, why was Edge, why was the video all queued up? Why did he wait till that moment? Like, there was so much of happenstance with all that I kind of rolled my eyes at. So it is what it is. So going back to the beginning of the show, we got MJF defending his ROH World Tag Team titles against The Righteous in a 2-on-1 handicap match. So two pay-per-views in a row. Not only is your world championship not on the show, but your world champion is opening the show. I don't think that's the best way to utilize MGF, but it is what it is, I guess. And they're thrown a curveball, presumably, with the Adam Cole ankle injury. Is it a work? Is it a shoot? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that. But MJF pulls out the victory. 9 minutes, 40 seconds. A lot of shtick, a lot of comedy. We got MJF doing the kangaroo kick. He cut a little promo beforehand going after Vincent and Dutch. He put over that he was going to do a body slam. I'm not going to point out which one is which, because I'll be honest, I already forgot who's whom. But the bigger one, not the guy with the white boy dreads, but whoever that one is. You know, I got the Wikipedia back in. Well, if only if I clicked on their names. Okay, so it is Dutch. Unfortunately, Dutch does not have a Wikipedia profile picture, but Vincent does, and Vincent was not the guy who got body slammed. It was Dutch. But yeah, MJF gets the win. A lot of shtick, a lot of comedy. Crowd was into it, I guess. That's a positive, but once again, you guys know I'm not the biggest fan of the MJF babyface run right now, and I think this epitomized it. He was so over the top, so goofy, and it just doesn't even make you care about the result of the match, to be honest. Like, you just want to see MJF do his stuff, get his shit in, and get in, get out, and that's pretty much what happened. Then we got a real wrestling match here. We got Eddie Kingston taking on Katsuyori Shibata for the ROH World Championship and the Strong Openweight title. This one goes 11 minutes. Kind of felt longer, to be honest, but not in a bad way. Both guys just beat the piss out of each other, slapping chops, you know, forearms and all that good fun stuff. And I really enjoyed this match. Didn't overstay its welcome, as I said. Eddie Kingston ends up getting the win, I believe, with the spinning back fist. He hit a few of them. There was a really good finishing sequence where, you know, Shibata stays up, hits Kingston with some stuff. Kingston retaliates, and then he kind of spammed, like, those back fists at the very end to get the win over Shibata. But just a really solid, fun match by these two guys. And technically, WrestleDream is supposed to be, well, it is. They did a little, I did see, they did a little tribute to Inoki at the beginning of the show or on the pre-show. But this definitely was an ode to strong-style Japanese wrestling. Shibata, obviously, you know, with the New Japan ties. Eddie Kingston loves Japanese wrestling, mostly the All Japan stuff from the mid-90s, but just a great match. Not the best match on the show, but I would say definitely up there, especially in the short time window. And then next up, I would say the surprise of the night, singles women's match, AEW TBS title, the only women's match on the show. Chris Statlander defends against Julia Hart, and this one only goes 9 minutes, but I thought this match was a lot of fun. It was kind of sloppy in points, but I thought they pulled off some good moves as well. The dynamic of, you know, Statlander being a bigger babyface against Julia Hart, the undersized heel. It's an awkward dynamic, but I thought they pulled it off well. Julia is athletic. They put over her competitive cheerleading background, and she was able to, you know, do some athletic stuff and able to kind of move and help Statlander kind of get in the power positions as she needed to. I forget what the exact sequence is, but it ended up where Julia was on Statlander's shoulders in the electric chair position, and I just thought it was just a really smooth transition. I think she turned into a Hurricane Rana or something, but there was some solid stuff in here. Like, there were some botches. Like, Julia went to do a seated senton or, like, step on Statlander into a senton. I don't know. It didn't look great, but, like, 90% of the stuff they did worked, and I thought the crowd got into it. You know, Statlander isn't, like, the best, you know, they're kind of putting her in the position to be the top babyface, but she's not exactly hitting that stride that she could be, but she's getting a lot of reps, she's having matches, she's cutting some promos, and it's not terrible, she's not hitting out of the park either, and people really like the House of Black, and right now Julia Hart's the only active one, having a lot of matches, so, crowd was behind Statlander, kind of, but this was a little bit more of a mixed crowd. But at the end of the day, this was the match where they didn't care too much about it because there was really no reason for them to care too much about it. But then at the end of the day, the women worked hard enough that they did get the crowd end up. They did get the crowd behind them at the end of the match. That was kudos to them. Then we got a four-way tag team match for a future AEW World Tag Team Championship. Why? I don't know. Just put all these guys together and let them have a match. I guess we got the Guns, the Lucha Bros, Orange Cassidy, and Hook, as well as the Young Bucks. This one goes 12 minutes and 40 seconds, but they stuff 20 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. They just go all over the place. This was the type of match that I don't like, where it's the multi-tag team match, but there's only two people legal at a time. They have to, you know, tag the other, you know, tag another tag team in, but they never truly tag the other tag team in. It's always a blind tag, and it always just never looks good. The Guns tried to exploit this, where they do the, you know, they ended up being the legal members, both of them, and then they were going to pin each other, and then the referee just didn't count them. Why not? It makes zero sense why they couldn't be legal, why they both can't be the legal competitors. It wasn't stated in the rules. But I think they just kind of outsmarted themselves on that one because they did kind of shine a spotlight on a part of the match that I don't like. But they, for whatever reason, they got Phoenix out of the match early. He had a lot of tape on his shoulder. He wrestled a little bit, and then he sold the shoulder. He got pushed into the ring post, and he was gone for the rest of the match. I would assume that was part of the storyline because at the end of the day, Penta did take the pinfall loss against the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks are the number one contenders, and spoiler alert, they will face FTR for a tag team title shot somewhere down the line. So with Penta ended up taking the fall at the end, I would assume that meant the Phoenix injury was a, you know, storyline write-off. We are going to get Nick Jackson taking on Phoenix on Wednesday on Dynamite for the international title. Maybe there's some sort of, you would assume there'd be some sort of story, maybe some promos, but probably not. It might just open Dynamite and there's like, oh my god, it's a great match, two tag teams guys in a singles match going at each other and all the history they have, and they'll just assume everyone knows and cares that much about it. But probably not. But match was fine. A lot of stuff, a lot of moves. Nothing really memorable, I would say, from this match, but yeah, it is what it is. It was just kind of there. Then we got Swerve Strickland taking on Hangman Adam Page in a singles match, 20 minutes, 15 seconds. This was the string of numerous 20-minute matches on the card. And Swerve from Seattle, or from Tacoma, gets a really good reaction. Crowd is behind him. Hangman gets a okay reaction, but obviously not what you would want from a top tier, one of the pillars, one of, you know, the top baby faces you wanted at the start of this company to be getting 4 years in. But you know, they just had a really solid match for 20 minutes. The crowd was definitely behind Swerve in this one. I would assume that Tony and AEW had to know that this was going to happen. They played into it a little bit with Hangman kind of scowling at the crowd, but he wasn't doing anything like too heelish. Swerve was definitely much more of the heel in the match, doing some underhanded tactics, you know, Prince Nana getting involved, and especially in the finish. But overall, it was just kind of like, you wouldn't have, they didn't change anything up. Like, you would have expected this match to take place in Houston compared to Washington. And, you know, if it did take place in Houston, maybe the crowd would have been more in favor of Hangman. But with it being in Seattle, obviously they're going to be much more behind Swerve. And I don't know if that was just wishful thinking on their part, they can turn the crowd, or they're going to play into that later on in the feud and in the storyline. But so at the end, Prince Nana does get involved. He gets ejected by putting Swerve's foot on the ring rope. He gets kicked out, but he leaves his crown behind, and Swerve decks Hangman with it, and he gets the pinfall victory. So Swerve gets a good win, obviously tainted win. Hangman loses again, probably going to go further down in the pitfall, but we're going to get another match. Solid match. Crowd reaction was really strong for Swerve, not so much for Hangman. As I said, don't know how Tony and how AEW was expecting that to go, but if you would have told me that's how it went, I was not surprised. And the crowd was at the end of the match, the crowd was doing the whole Prince Nana Swerve dance. So that's going to be a new thing that's over with the crowd to do. Kind of funny seeing like a lot of mostly white wrestling fans do that dance. It's kind of awkward, but also funny at the same time. But I am excited to see another match from these two fellas. They wrestled for like 15 minutes, pretty straight up, and then the finish was what it was. But I really did enjoy this match, a solid match. Then kind of a palate cleanser before we really get into kind of the main event stuff with Ricky Starks and Wheeler Yuta. John Moxley joins on commentary. He stayed for the next two matches, and I thought John Moxley was great on commentary with his concussion he suffered. He was probably going to be on the card wrestling in some capacity, maybe even in against Ricky Starks. I don't know, but I thought Moxley was just fantastic on commentary in both matches. He also stayed around for the Danielson match, and I just thought he brought, and him and JR, I thought in particular, I think they just worked very well off each other. They both have the same type of sports-like instinct and kind of the stuff I like about wrestling. And in these two matches that were very technical, and you can kind of play that up, I thought John Moxley did a just fantastic job. He kind of got off the rails a little bit, you know. He probably doesn't know, he doesn't have a prep sheet in front of him. He just went out there and legit talked about what he saw. So there was some points where he kind of, you know, was yelling. He cussed a few times, like, you know, yelling at Wheeler, just like, you know, come on, let's fucking go, and all the other stuff. But it made it feel more real and made it feel authentic. So I don't know if a full Dynamite episode of John Moxley is a good idea, but having him do some commentary for his BCC guys is a great idea, and hopefully he's well. His concussion is good enough. I mean, he was able to travel to Seattle, so I would assume that means he's good enough to travel and possibly wrestle. But back to the match itself, Ricky Starks defeats Wheeler Yuta in 9:55. Big Bill comes down at ringside, but doesn't really get involved. He kind of caught Ricky falling off the top rope, and that was pretty much it. Nothing too major in terms of heel interference. And Ricky Starks beats Wheeler, and that's exactly what the match should have been. Then the match everyone's been was looking forward to, Bryan Danielson, Zack Sabre Jr. This one goes 22-45, and Danielson gets the win with the Bicycle Knee. I thought Nigel McGuinness and John Moxley played off each other fantastic, as well as JR and John Moxley. And the running bit of the never-ending feud between Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness is just hilarious. And add on top with Zack Sabre Jr., you know, fellow countryman from England. Nigel was just over the top in his critiques of Danielson and in his praise for Zack Sabre Jr. So I thought the commentary in these past two matches were just phenomenal. And I thought this match was phenomenal. Just crisp wrestling, technical wrestling. And in the end, he hits the knee, which, as Nigel correctly said, was a strike, was not a grapple. So in this supposed technical masterpiece, Danielson ends up winning with a strike. That's not clean graps. So that's something Zach could fall back on, and maybe we get Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. in the Tokyo Dome for the New Japan Strong TV title. And they really kind of grapple for like 10-15 minutes, and maybe Zach gets his win back, or maybe Danielson gets the title and stays in New Japan for a little bit. But this match was exactly what you thought it was going to be and exactly what it should have been. Just absolutely phenomenal. My favorite match of the show. This was still, you know, this was the 11th match on the card. The sixth match on the actual show? So at this point, the crowd has seen a lot of wrestling, but they were up for it. They were, you know, I think that's the good thing about this type of style is, you know, people get invested and they're, you know, watching it intently, but you're not kind of overdoing it with a lot of spots. And, you know, you're not trying to keep people just hyped up for the entirety of the 22-minute match. You kind of take them on ebbs and flows. And then when you hit that nice crescendo, like I thought they did at the very end, just chef's kiss. My favorite match on the docket. Then We get a six-man tag match with the Don Callis family, Takeshita, Guevara, and Will Ospreay, taking on Chris Jericho and the Golden Elite, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi. This one also goes 22 minutes, and the Don Callis family wins with Sam Guevara pinning Chris Jericho. You know, a fun match. Six-man. Will Ospreay kind of blended in this match. Like, to be honest, he was just kind of there. The story was mostly on the other five competitors, which would make sense. They're probably going to be on AEW television more often. Even Ibushi, like, had his spots where he did his whole no-sell spot between the three of them. And then ultimately, Takeshita kind of got the better of him, which I thought was good. If you would have asked me what the finish was going to be, I would have said the Don Callis family should win. But I probably would have said Takeshita pins Jericho. But instead of that, they did Sammy pins Jericho. Now, why did Sammy lose to Jericho in their original match at Grand Slam? I don't exactly know why, but that's what they did. And maybe they had, you know, they knew this finish was going to happen. So that's why they did that original finish, brother, 50-50 booking. But, you know, match was really good. Crowd, I would say this match kind of tired the crowd out, kind of took the last of what they had in them, because there was a lot of, you know, a lot of big spots, a lot of big stars in this match. And I would say the next match kind of suffered because that AEW tag title match, FTR defends against Aussie Open. This one goes 20 minutes. This one, solid match, like fun, you know, good technical tag team wrestling, but there was no reason to care about this match. And I just think the crowd didn't care about this match. They were, you know, sat on their hands for most of it. They clapped when they thought they should clap. And FTR gets the win. There was real no drama involved, because I think everyone presumes, especially with the Young Bucks winning earlier in the night, you're not just going to have Aussie Open win the tag titles and have them face the Young Bucks in a couple weeks or in a month. So I think that is the reason why the crowd wasn't into it that much. And also because they were tired, because at this point, you know, we're pushing past 3 hours on the regular show and well over 4 hours, and probably 5 hours and 6 hours, depending on travel and everything. So, you know, it was a West Coast show, so it was earlier in the day, which can kind of help keep the crowd awake a little bit more. But, you know, crowd definitely kind of hit that wall, and I thought they weren't going to get them back. And the beginning of the Christian Cage Darby Allin match, I kind of thought they were still dead a little bit, but, you know, once all the chicanery happened with the exposed floorboard and Edge coming back, obviously they really got up and got excited for that stuff. But I think the semi-main, the penultimate match, really did suffer from the lack of crowd heat. But overall, really good show. Not on par, I would say, with All Out, which I thought is probably the best show of the year, at least for AEW speak. But everything delivered. Nothing was bad. But once again, rounding back, three shows in 5 weeks, $50 a pop. Just doesn't, like, if you're thinking about buying the show, I probably would say no. Like, to be honest, I don't think it's worth the $50. Like, there's some aspects of it that I thought were good, as a, you know, Swerve, Hangman, Danielson, Zack Sabre, but to plop down $50 for this, I just cannot say that it was worth that type of money. But still a good show overall. And now with AEW presumably going to 12 pay-per-views a year or something around there next year, this definitely, they need to get on some sort of streaming service. Because like, if this was on a Max show, like if this is Fastlane, like if Fastlane was, you know, this exact card and everything like that, I would say this was a phenomenal show. It was great. But I think with the pay-per-view, with the kind of built-in cachet that AEW has had over the past 4 years, you know, it just didn't really hit that next level that a lot of the AEW matches hit. And the show felt like just a bunch of different matches that didn't mean too much, but they were good wrestling matches. And I think that's something that AEW and Tony Khan needs to work on. Of, you know, he's a good matchmaker, Tony Khan is, but not the best booker. You know, telling stories and hitting that great crescendo. And like he talked about on the conference call, he was like, oh, we have more storylines than anybody. Okay, dude, that doesn't mean they're great stories. You can like Vince Russo back in the day, bro. One of the positives of Vince Russo was he had something for everyone, you know, up and down the card, from the lowest of the low to the main events. Someone, you know, everyone was doing something, but the stuff everyone was doing was shit. So, like, if everyone's doing something, that's good for them. But you need to, especially the main event stuff, it just all comes back to what MJF is doing. And that's why I'm just so down on it, because I just think it's bringing everybody down. With, I mean, it's not bringing everyone's down in terms of the creative and, you know, the, well, I mean, kind of on the television product, but if you're not supposed to care about the main event title and, you know, what is supposed to be the biggest prize in that company, why do other people care? Why would the fans care about anything else, especially like lower stuff? So, but yeah, that was Wrestle Dream. Fun match, you know, fun match with a bunch of different shows, but doesn't hit that you gotta watch this best show ever type of thing with AEW. So that'll do it for Under the Radar. Thank you all very much for tuning in. I will be back Wednesday/Thursday. The whole gang will be back together, me, Katie, and Philip. So until next time, let me know what you thought of Wrestle Dream. If you did watch it, hit us up on the socials, The Bullet Cast on Twitter and Instagram. You know where to find us. If you want to follow me, you don't need to follow the personals. If you want to follow Curveballs and Chair Shots, that's where I'm mostly tuned in to Curveballs and CS on Twitter and Instagram. But until next time, later in the week, love y'all. Big hugs, tiny kisses. Bye-bye.